It's David Del Rio. Thank you so much for being a fan, and thank you so much for being a fan of that crazy, crazy movie, The Belko Experiment. I had such an amazing time in Colombia. We shot it in Bogota, Colombia, and it was just like a stage play. All these actors coming together and figuring out a way to how to make it so true that people's heads were exploding was really, really fun. And, you know, we were a real core group that went out every night and partied and danced, and we just clubbed the night away. And if you ever have a chance to go to Bogota, Colombia, I would suggest that. And a little advice for you, don't go out there.
All employees, lend me your full attention.
In a world where zombies, ghosts, serial killers, and vampires all exist, it's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin, and they are all that stand between you and the films that could end the world. Welcome to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There Horror Movie Review Podcast. Just want to thank all our fans and listeners. We really appreciate all the support. Before we jump into tonight's film review, I just want to give a quick shout out to our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just search for at Don't Go Out There, and you'll see Brian's awesome artwork he did for us. And if you can, just whenever you see our post, you know, just share them to your friends. We really appreciate that. And a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. It's got all of our episodes, interviews, celebrity shout outs, our store. Got everything that you would need from us on the website. So check that out. And if you can, just give us a quick 5-star rating on iTunes. If you have an Apple product, we really appreciate that. We've been reaching a lot of new people, getting a lot of messages, DMs on social from random people we don't know saying they love the show. And we really appreciate that. It's awesome. Tonight is Brother Brian's film choice. 2016's The Belko Experiment. Brian, you want to go first with your general overview, brother?
Yeah, sure. First of all, I mean, I completely understand the criticisms of this movie. I mean, I may not agree with most of them, but this is one of those movies where it was hard for me to be critical of it because honestly, it unnerved me when I first saw it. And, you know, and that's because I work in an environment that's very similar. And honestly, this is going to sound a little bit extreme, but based on my place of employment, I've honestly expected an active shooter situation. And as weird as this sounds, you know, I've actually been surprised that it hasn't happened yet in the almost 20 years that I've worked there. And, you know, this movie reminded me of that particular situation, especially around the time this movie was released and it was, you know, happening pretty frequently all over the country. But, notice I said released because it was actually made and like Cabin in the Woods, it was held for like 2 years, I believe, before it was being released. Look, this movie made me feel claustrophobic at times. And to me, it was a statement whether or not James Gunn meant to write it that way, on it being like almost like a social experiment, you know, a would you commit murder if you were put in that position, you know, type of movie, a lot like The Purge. So I understand how it would garner, you know, those comparisons as well. It did to me anyway. Again, it's the realism that this movie kind of brings, as well as the like the personal connections that I relate to this one, which I'll kind of get into a little bit. That kind of made me pick this movie and, I want to say like it. It's just, you know, like I said, it unnerved me and that's enough for me to give it some special attention.
Oh yeah. I'll just give mine real quick. This is a fun movie to watch. It's got a little bit of realism. It makes you really kind of cautious, especially during these times about, getting stuff inserted into your body. It really kind of tests the limits to what a human will do to survive. So it's pretty cool. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but this is a fun watch. Mike, do you want to go next with your general overview, brother?
So this last week was the second time I ever watched this movie. I watched it pretty shortly after it came out. I remember liking it. I think it's got, you know, and a lot of people have said this, so I don't want to like harp on it too bad or piggyback off of them or anything, but it's gotten some criticisms of things it could have done better, and I understand some of that stuff. I think one of the things that we're going to talk about as this episode goes on is using real office supplies to kill people instead of guns and all that stuff. I just think it would have made for cooler kills, but that's just the kind of horror fan I am. That wouldn't be, I'm not 100% sure that that's more realistic. I just would have preferred it. But outside of that, I think it's a fun movie. There's some, the characters I'm supposed to like, I don't. And the characters I'm not supposed to like, I do. And so that's kind of weird for me because it's a, dog eat dog world, man. But I think this movie takes that social experiment, kind of flips it on its head. It's really good. And, you get a little twist at the end that I think would have set up for a pretty fun sequel that we probably won't ever get because mixed box office and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I remember when the preview for this movie came out, I remember thinking to myself, I really like this concept. I really think this is an interesting concept for a movie. It's something I definitely wanted to see. And then I'll be honest with you, I forgot all about this movie. I hadn't seen it until yesterday. And I remembered once I looked into the movie and did some research, I was like, oh, yeah, it was that movie. I don't know why I never got around to it. But overall, like Brian said, it's something that's believable and realistic from a concept-wise standpoint. And I think it's an enjoyable movie. It does have its flaws, and it could have been done better. But the concept is enough to me to make it interesting and keep my attention. And overall, I thought it was an enjoyable movie. Not too bad, not too great, but the cast, I really enjoyed the cast. I think it was really well done. James Gunn, I really like his style. He does a good job of incorporating humor when necessary when writing movies. I mean, he did the same thing with Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought those were some well-written movies that he did as well. And overall, not a bad movie at all.
Oh, yeah. Before we jump into tonight, scene by scene, I just want to give a warning. There are a lot of characters, so if there are any Belko Experiment super fans out there and I get a character's name wrong, please forgive me in advance. I tried my best to get all of them right, I promise. Y'all ready to jump into tonight's scene by scene and film review, guys?
Yeah, I'm ready. Also want to apologize right off the bat for if I get anybody's name wrong, because like you said, there are a shit ton of characters introduced. And they're introduced within like the first 10 minutes of the movie. So,
yeah, and it's not like a slasher movie where they're not relevant, really. I mean, it's not just the chick getting banged in the woods or the stupid jock. They all kind of have like a little bit of a role. So, they're significant characters. So, like I said, apologies if I get any names wrong. But the film, it just starts off with, it says Bogota, Colombia. And the film starts in the streets of the market. Mike, he's staring at some masked kids, and then he gets a jump scare knock on the window. There's a guy just trying to sell him like this little corncob doll. We see these guards investigating all the employees' cars. The guard doesn't answer any of Barry's questions, and we see several employees sent home. It's the locals. Opening credits to some group music and our characters, they enter the building. Now we see the people watching them on monitors. Danny, she's a new employee. She's being welcomed to the company by Vince. She's warned of all the kidnapping that goes on in Colombia. Also asked how the tracer chimp implant went. Then I just wrote there's some basic office work. And now we see Leandra being creepily stared at by Wendell. Now Mike gives her the corncob figure. She closes the blinds and she makes out with Mike. She thinks they're moving too fast because she's recently divorced. Then the boss, Barry, he walks in, but he doesn't seem to really care that there's some office romance going on. Roberto and Leota, they introduce themselves to Danny. Now we meet Keith and Peggy. They talk about their little ant farm. And shout out to Peggy. She was from Jason Goes to Hell. Mike asks where all the locals are. He looks out the window and sees the armed guards go into the metal hangar. Flip my page. So they go into the metal hangar outside. Mike calls Evan to ask about it. And then a voiceover on the intercom comes on. Lend your full attention. 80 of you now, but in 8 hours, most of you will be dead. Kill 2 employees in a half hour. If you don't, then there will be repercussions. And then I wrote, some of the employees panic, and some of it thinks just a joke. They head to the exits, but the doors and windows begin to seal off. Panic ensues. Now there's no cell reception. A lot of people are questioning Evan, and then Mike asks Bud to try and blowtorch out. Keith and a group go to the roof to try and get attention. Now Barry, the COO, gives everyone a speech. Remain calm and let's try and figure this out. Marty and Chet are smoking pot when the others get to the roof. Blowtorch does nothing to the metal and is not even hot, so they don't know what's going on. Wendell brings out bottled water to everyone and the AC is out now. Mike tells Barry he doesn't think this is a joke. The people on the roof try and get help from the guard, but he just ignores them and he's drinking his tea or coffee, and it's pretty funny. Marty says they're just testing them, and then all of a sudden a woman's head explodes right beside him. Back inside, another head explodes, but they think it's shooting. Chaos ensues as everyone flees. Barry says it's not a bullet wound. It was an explosion. It exploded from the inside of their head. Mike says it's the tags they implanted. Bud grabs a wrench and gives it to Lonnie. Watch my back. All right, that's the first two scenes they got. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I think it was Chris Stuckman, YouTuber, who said that he felt like the movie couldn't decide whether it was a dark comedy or not, and maybe the writer and director, James Gunn, couldn't agree on a tone for this film. But I personally like the dark theme it ended up going with. I would not have liked this as much if it was a meta dark comedy at all. And also, I know a lot of people say this is kind of a mixture of Office Space. And you know what? If they didn't want those comparisons, they shouldn't have cast John C. McGinley, for one, but definitely should have started it out, you know, a different route, because that being stuck in traffic scene with John Gallagher Jr.'s character, Mike, definitely is like the opening of Office Space, just with a little bit of a, you know, jump scare or whatever, instead of, damn, it feels good to be a gangster playing over the radio. But again, I think the Purge actually did a better job with the atmosphere, which is, I think, the same type of atmosphere that I got that they were trying to, I think, create with this drive-in here. But having the Purge to compare this to now, it's definitely not as good in that respect. To speak to Mike's character, at first, look, he's not a likable character to me. He's just not. I feel like he deserved to catch an ass whipping on multiple occasions during this movie. But I will give them a little bit of credit, knowing the end. I do like the character arc that he does get. We get Tony Goldwyn, the bad guy from Ghost as well, which I specifically remember saying the same thing about, you know, the bad guy from Ghost, but I cannot for the life of me remember what movie we were reviewing that he was in. I think it was Jason Part 6. Yeah, that's right. He was the guy that was driving the bug that got killed, with the whole credit card advertisement in there. But also, I know some reviews I've seen say that it doesn't seem realistic, but I vehemently disagree. I think Leandra, who's Adria Aruna's character, who is in the latest Pacific Rim, by the way, which was a disappointing film. But her and Mike's relationship doesn't seem forced to me. And I think that I relate to that more personally, again, because that's how I met my wife. So I have a little bit more of a personal connection there. Just a few more things. Like, I also think that these first few scenes, they do a good job of establishing like a normal monotonous day at the office. While like they give you a little bit of backstory with the company and they the chips and everything else, little one-liners here, but they don't go on too awful long. And then I think they pretty much quickly throw your ass into the shit. Let's see. Also, it may have been YouTuber. I think I wrote down Jeremy John's name, but I'm not sure. But they felt like that it was too obvious. Also, who would be like the alphas, meaning like McGinley and Goldwyn's characters, and who would be the betas, etc. But again, I felt like that was realistic to an actual real office space. Like the whole announcement over the intercom. I mean, say what you want about the acting one way or the other, but I feel like in an office space, like I just said, like both extremes would all be represented. Like they would have some with the panic, some the calm, the alphas, etc. So I think they did a good job establishing that. And lastly, Nico brought this up, you know, during the intro about Rusty Schwimmer, the redhead playing Peggy, she was actually the restaurant owner, the lady who made the Jason mask out of a little hamburger meat from Jason Goes to Hell. I'm glad Nico caught that as well, because I recognized her immediately.
Yeah, so right off the bat, the first thing that I notice is the freaking montage at the beginning or the opening credits or whatever, and it's the Spanish or the Colombian version of I Will Survive. That's fucking, I think that's really cool. It's like a weird tone setter to me. But like you said, there is a lot of office space in this movie. You know, John C. McGinley is just one of the things. But you mentioned the intro. I was going to touch on that, but you already did. But, yeah, so right off, I'm kind of with you, Brian, where I'm not a big fan of the character of Mike. A little too passive, and that's okay. It's just not someone that I'm willing to root for. And I get the morality of it all. And his relationship with Leandra is believable, or at least to me, because I don't work in an office setting like that, but I could see how that would happen. And I do think, you know, the little scene where Barry catches him is actually really good. Like, I thought that was really funny and well done. They just, one thing I will criticize this opening for, I've already said, is they introduce a lot of characters in a very short amount of time. And it gets a little hard to keep track of people and their names. So, and, you know, I'm very aware in 2016 that we're not writing this movie to be reviewed on a podcast 4 years later, or, you know, whatever. I guess it'd be 2012, actually, or 2014. When they were writing this movie, no way they thought it was going to be reviewed by podcasters down the road, because I had a hard time keeping track of people's names, but that's okay. I think not a lot happens here, in my opinion, but you start to see the seeds of what I like to call and what a lot of wrestling fans call a heel turn out of Barry. So you start to see some of that. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I have. They're establishing some characters here, and I think that's really nice. You know, like you touched on, Brian, how everyone has a different reaction to what's going on. I did like that. I do think that that's realistic. It makes it feel like me and my friends, where I would probably act one way and I have friends that would act another way. So just given the situation, I think they did a good job of that. But, you know, like I said, the one downside, I have a hard time keeping track of who is who and who I'm supposed to feel is important.
Yeah. So my thoughts on the opening scene. Yeah, you're right. Shout out to the Gloria Gaynor song that we got in opening credits. I Will Survive in Spanish. That was awesome. But I think it's a good, effective opening scene. You can tell something is up or something's off about the work day just from the get go, because you've got the skepticism about people going through security, and then they turn someone away, make them go home. You got new security guards. They ask for the COO's ID. They don't recognize him. He's nobody to them. So let you know that something's weird going on about this day. Wendell is such a creepy pervert. In this opening scene, I find it hard to like or dislike anyone based on this opening scene, because we don't know anything about him yet. The only thing I do know is that Wendell will give you the heebie-jeebies the way he's staring at Leandra. And so I thought that was a good job of quickly introducing the fact that he probably jacks off at work. The next thing, you know, Barry's character is such a COO or boss or a high-level executive, because the way that he just kind of took control after the shit started going sideways and gave the whole typical coach speech, if you will, where he's like, I'm going to look into that. I'll circle back around. It's like, okay, guy, you're not doing shit. You're just trying to smooth the waters here. That's typical high-level management there. I think they do a good job of introducing a fair amount of characters here to set the atmosphere. Now, what I mean by that, Mike, you said that they introduce a lot and a lot of people in a short amount of time, so it's kind of confusing and everything. But to me, that does a good job of really letting you empathize with Danny. This is her first day at work. Shit, it feels like it's my first day at that office.
Yeah, that's fair.
I feel like I'm at the office working with them, because of the way the shots are moving through the office and showing you the post-it notes getting stuck up, the copy machine, the people on the phone, the people on the computer. And so you feel like you could work here, and then you're meeting all these people just as Danny's meeting them. And so it kind of built some sympathy, some natural built-in love for or affection for her character, just based on that, in my opinion. When all the shit starts happening and you hear the voice, it's like, oh shit. Because like Brian said, and like we said at the opening, this isn't that far off from believability. And so, you know, put yourself in this situation. How would you feel if you're at work and all of a sudden a voice comes on and says, hey, in the next 30 minutes, kill two of your colleagues. What do you do? And so you've got Barry, who is you know, he's taking the route of, let's try to just manage this thing. Let's don't actually do anything. Let's just try to manage the situation. You've got Mike, who's freaking out, And then I think you get a great line from Barry when he's taught, when he mentions that, he says, you know, when something happens, you've got two kind of, some people are bound to overreact and panic, right? You ever think you're one of those people? And so that to me, yeah, you never know how you're going to act until some shit really happens.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why I don't think that any of the characters, again, I don't think they're any likable or dislikable, because it's hard to really gauge how would I react in this situation. And then you go up to the roof and you got Marty, who's played by Sean Gunn, which is James Gunn's brother, who's also in both of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Marty's smoking his second joint of the day. He's like, God damn, man, how much do you hate your job? You're getting high already twice? But I think that's funny. And he's the player that, or the character that's kind of downplaying the situation and saying, no, this is all, you know, this is all in your heads. And he's stays true to that the whole movie. Reminds me of another Marty from Cabin in the Woods who
said the likes same to thing.
I thought that was very funny that we just did that movie, then we're just doing this movie, and Cabin in the Woods is the movie that reminded Brian of this movie. So yeah, definitely some similarities there. And then you know, the last thing I've got is that first kill when the head explodes and the blood splatters on Marty's face. It's like, oh shit, because naturally you kind of feel like everyone else did, like they're being shot at, because they're on the roof. It's feasible that a sniper took them out. But then you go inside and people start, heads start exploding. It's like, no, someone's not, how could this be gunfire? And then you get the call back. Oh, they put those traces in her heads. And it's a very tense scene because, again, how would you react to the situation? I don't personally know that I would take a job where I had to have something implanted in my head. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but, you know, and so,
I think a lot of people would. I mean, I wouldn't personally, but I think especially for the right money, I think a lot of people would.
Right. And so it's, like I said, it's how would you handle that situation? How would you handle the situation of once you've made that decision, then you find out these things are rigged to blow? Oh, shit. And so I think they do a great job in these opening couple of scenes. Another reference or another tie to the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, you get Michael Rooker, who plays Yondu in the films. And so I really appreciate that. I'm a Marvel fan, so I appreciated all the crossover there. But I thought that the dynamic between him and his buddy there, what was his name? Drawing a blank.
Chet. You talking Marty's friend?
Chet. Yeah.
The big level guy?
No. I'm talking about Bud's friend, the two maintenance guys.
Lonnie.
Yeah. Sorry.
David Dostakamakalin, I believe is his name, or David Dismakalin or some shit. I don't even know how I'm trying to. I can't even pronounce that.
Let's go with Lonnie.
Leo, David Dismakalin. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, the dynamic that they have is an interesting one, too, because you, I don't know. Maybe I picked up on something weird, but, they have a weird relationship. It's almost like Lonnie's not all the way stable. And so I thought it was a solid opening, a couple of scenes. I enjoyed it a lot. And David Dastmalchian also has ties to comic book movies. So I liked him immediately. Anyway, he's in The Dark Knight. So anyway.
And the Ant-Man movies. So that's Marvel too. Yeah, there you go.
True. There you go. So that's my thoughts on the opening scenes. We're off to a good start.
Yeah, Lonnie is definitely the guy who wears a mask at home by himself.
Yes.
All right, Mike, he goes to the kitchen and he's freaking out. He's like ripping open all the drawers and he grabs a box cutter. He locks himself in the bathroom and he looks in the mirror and he starts to cut the back of his head open to try and remove that tracer. The voice tells him to stop immediately or they'll detonate. He stops at the, you know, they do a countdown from 10. He stops at 3 and he gives up. He walks out of the bathroom and Leandra gives him a big hug. He gets his wounds stitched up. And now Wendell is asking Leandra in the kitchen while she's getting him some ice about Mike and all the mixed signals that she's been sending Wendell. She tells him to fuck off. Leandra brings Mike some ice. Vince and another fella find all the cameras that have been watching them. Barry gives Evan a water and he like consoles him because he's, you know, the guy whose head blew up inside was Evan's friend. He asks Evan for the keys to the weapon room, and Evan refuses, and he quits when Barry tries to pull his rank on him. Marty washes the blood out of his hair. Bud and Lonnie are trying to fix the AC now. Lonnie says they're trying to break them down, so they'll start killing. Intercom again. This game is real, it says. Do not remove the cameras or tags. There are 76 of you left. We want 30 dead in 2 hours. If not, 60 will be removed by our own means. More chaos upstairs. Lonnie is scared AF. Lonnie grabs Helen knives out the kitchen. Marty turns the fire alarm on to try to get some help. Barry assembles everyone again. Lonnie cracks Bud in the head super hard with that wrench, killing him. Danny cries when she sees it happening, and she's hiding and she sees it. Then he notices, he notices her and pursues her. She pushes, Lonnie grabs Danny and pushes her against the wall, but then she pushes him off of her, and his head is impaled on some of the spikes that are sticking out of the wall. All right, Brian, go ahead. That's the next two scenes I got.
Yeah, the Mike box cutter scene was definitely intense for me, but I thought that the people counting down in that situation was stupid because, I mean, what would have happened if he had gotten it out at 7 or 8? Like, then what? I don't know. And the whole Wendell and Leandra scene and the whole mixed messages conversation, I felt like that felt out of place too, because especially in a situation like this. This is a conversation I think they should have had at the beginning before the crisis started. I don't know. It felt weird right there. Also, we were talking a little bit about this beforehand, but I really love the security guard, Evan's character. I think James Earl Jones, does a great job of playing that character. And I think he's probably one of my favorite characters in this movie. Dustin touched on this just a little bit, and I'll just call him David D. But David D., as Lonnie, he does a really good job of playing someone who's quickly falling into crazy, and that's a testament to his good acting, because he was in all those movies that we discussed before: Blade Runner, Dark Knight, Ant-Man, etc. And I think he's really great as he kills Michael Rooker, and his death scene, I think, is great. That big dent in his head, and him acting the way he did before he died, I thought was great acting there. But I will say, a real nitpick, they did mess up, as when Danny kills Lonnie, you can actually see Lonnie still breathing wise on the ground.
Yeah. So I like this collection of scenes right here more than the ones before it. First of all, you get, the box cutter scene with Mike, and that's intense to me. And I'm not disagreeing with you on the fact that, what happens if he gets the chip out, but I did like how locked into that scene I was when watching it. I was like, are they going to kill? I mean, I kind of questioned if they were going to kill off this main character that early, because I really didn't know what to expect out of this movie. So you never really know. And so I like that. I like that they made those things bombs in the first place. I think that's cool. And we get some cool looking kills with it later. Yeah. As far as Wendell goes, not that I don't necessarily disagree with you on the placement of it, but I think that scene works for the character of Wendell, and Dustin touched on it earlier. And I know that's not what you meant, Brian, but just it didn't bother me, because Dustin touched on it ever. He's a huge creep. And, we had the thing, don't call me perv and all that stuff. That does take place. So I just think, while it made a bit, I would have maybe liked to see it earlier. I like that scene's there, because, it just makes you, this lets me know I'm not pulling for Wendell, or at least I'm not, because he's a fucking weirdo. And I think the intensity of Barry and Evan going back and forth over the room keys, and I know there's mixed reaction on the character of Evan, but I like him. He's one of my favorites, and maybe he should have given Barry the keys if he wanted to live, but he's a good guy, but he has just enough, for lack of a better word, crazy in him, where he's willing to pull a gun on somebody and maybe use it. And so I like the character of Evan. He ended up making the wrong choice in hindsight for saving his life. But still, I think that exchange is good. Kill 30 in 2 hours. I just had a hunch the first time I saw it that wasn't going to happen. But this Lonnie with the dent in the head, that was really good. I think his kill was really good. And I like that we already have Danny she's already killed someone. Like, I like that that happens early, because you have, she's killed someone, Mike hasn't killed anybody. And so, and you know, just, and then Danny hides the rest of the movie. And so it just, the character of Danny, I'm going to save it. But yeah, so that's pretty much all I have. I like this set of scenes. I really do. And you get a lot more here than you did. Now, to me, after this, you get like a little bit of a come down for a little bit, but that's okay. Good set of scenes here. I'm highly entertained by the movie at this point.
Yeah, same. So they continue to build off their opening scenes as far as their momentum and my engagement into the film right here. You know, you get Mike where he's cutting the thing out of the back of his head. That's intense, like you said, Brian, but I tend to agree with you. Like, what's the point in giving him that time with no incentive? You know, like, instead of saying stop in 10 seconds, because you're right, he could have very well pulled it out sooner than that. Maybe tell him, stop within 10 seconds. If you do get it out, then we're going to kill 30 of your people right now. Maybe, you know, just give him some kind of incentive to stop.
Right.
But it did make for entertaining television. It did have you glued to the scene screen, because you're like, oh shit, is he gonna get it? And you know, when he stops, it's like, okay, all that's for naught. I don't know if I'd be able to cut into the back of my head and then just you know, stop without being successful. But anyway, Evan to me is one of the more likable characters in the whole movie, because that's what you want out of security guard, right? You want someone who isn't going to necessarily do the selfish thing to save himself, which is what he could have done, go for the weapons because he has the keys and make sure that if no one else makes it, he's going to make it. To me, he embodies what's, you know, the security guard, I don't know if they have an oath, but the security guard oath should be, which is, it's my job to make sure every one of us is secure. I'm not going to arm you so you can kill people. And so I think his standpoint was he wanted to take a more logical approach to it, try to think this out, try to find any other way to ensure that people don't, you know, that people make it out of the office building alive today. And so I really liked Evan. And on, you know, on the flip side of that, God, Wendell, like I said, such a creep. That scene where he's telling her he's clocked every single look that she's given him and all the flirtatious emails. It's like, to me, that is the that's the mindset of a true sicko, like someone who has mental illness. That if let's say this is a normal day at the office, and then we follow these people for a couple more months, it wouldn't surprise me if he turned out to be like a serial rapist or something in the office, because that guy's got issues. And I do love how I love her accent when she said "fuck off," because she goes "fuck off," and the way she said it made me laugh every time. Because I rewatched the movie. I watched it twice, and both times I laughed. And then, you know, talk about upping the intensity, upping the ante. We go from, you've got 30 minutes to kill two of your colleagues, and you're like, okay, I've got to kill two of my colleagues. That's a lot. Killing one colleague is a lot. But now you want us to kill 30 people in 2 hours? Like, that lets you know that these people aren't playing. They ain't messing around. Shit's getting real in a hurry. And, you know, you get the death where Lonnie, did he mean to kill Bud? Was he just freaking out and accidentally killed Bud? Either way, he's strong as shit to cave his skull in like that.
Yes. Oh, you know, yes.
If Dominic Toretto beat a guy with a pipe wrench and didn't kill him, and I'm supposed to believe that Lonnie's going to hit Bud once with the wrench and cave his head in like that, Vin Diesel is a much more imposing figure than you know, Lonnie here. So I don't know. Maybe I'm not supposed to look that much into it, but there's no continuity between the Fast and Furious and the Velcro experiment. I'm a little thrown off.
there's hardly also any continuity in Fast and Furious, but anyway.
That's true.
That's true.
You go from street racing to jumping over helicopters with your cars. Anyway, then you get another accidental death with Lonnie dying. It's like, shit, if they could accidentally kill everybody, then maybe their moral conscience would be clean. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out that way, and they fall one short. It's like, holy shit. You know, if 29 of my colleagues have died, and I know that only one stands in between 20 or 30 others being killed, I might just have to man up and take someone out at that point, because one for 30 is a pretty substantial trade-off there. So you might have to put the morals on the back burner and save 30 of your colleagues, but they don't do it. Holy shit. This is the part of the movie where you're like, okay, they got to figure something out.
You know, speaking of the 30 colleagues and you're killing 30 of your 60, 30 coworkers or all 60 will be killed. Like I was, and I did not see any trivia on this like later, but I was watching the trailer, the very first trailer that came out for this movie, and the intercom, the very first trailer actually says each person has to kill 3 of your coworkers or else 6 will be killed. So obviously somewhere between when that first trailer came out and the movie was released, they changed that like exponentially, like they changed that a lot. So I didn't do any research into why, but it's just something I noticed, a little tidbit.
They just wanted to make Barry to be more of a badass, and I appreciate that. All right, Barry says we need to discuss all options. Mike says no to killing anyone. Leandra says we can hang banners to get help, but Barry says it's a horrible idea. Barry, you know, they all start to walk out. Barry asks Terry if you have kids and what's his conscience say. Barry says my wife and kids need me and it's time to be bold. Marty slaps the water out of Chet's hand and dumps it out, saying that they've all been poisoned. Mike and Leandra, they get the items to make the banners. They walk in on Barry, Wendell, and Terry blowtorching to get to the weapons closet. Barry tells Mike he doesn't give a fuck what you think. Evan pulls his gun out on them. Mike begins to console him. Mike takes the gun, and I have a huge nitpick with this part. Mike takes the gun and shoots the hoses on the gas tank so they can't cut open into the weapons closet. I wrote, an explosion probably should have happened here. I mean, that's fucking gas, and you shoot it. So, I mean, that probably should have blew up and killed them all. Barry tells him that was a stupid fucking move as they all walk away. Evan tells Mike that was hardcore as they share a moment in the elevator. Mike tells him to be wary of Barry, Wendell, and Terry. Leandra expresses concern to Mike. Keith jokes that they all heard the conversation. I thought it was pretty funny. They start to hang the banners, and then the guards open fire on them. They have pretty bad aim, though. The voice says the detonator in their head will be detonated if they try to hang another banner. And then I wrote, Mike tries to do it again like an idiot, but he gets snatched down. Now they go back to the stairwell. Now he starts to question his job now to Leandra. And he's like, he just starts pouring out an exposition dump. Why do I have this job? Is our job even appreciated? Blah, 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 blah. Barry ambushes Mike with a fire extinguisher, hitting him in the head. Barry says he's putting people in danger. And then Wendell, he kills Evan with a stab right to his chest area. And then he holds a cleaver to Leandra's throat, but Barry stops him. All right, Brian, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I'll say the writing is good here because I think Mike makes a great point whenever he says that, you know, there's no way that they let any of us live to tell about this anyway. Well, I mean, which is a great point. But you know what? He's catching an ass whipping too, by the way. If he was, you know, the whole blowtorch scene, if I'm Barry or Wendell, like instantly he's catching an ass whipping right there. Despite him, you know, not blowing everybody up by shooting that thing, like you said. But hell, even if I'm Leandra, he's catching an ass whooping because she seems to have gotten her shit together. And I mean, I know Nico disagrees with me, but I actually really like her character. And she seems like one of the only ones in the movie that does have her shit together. And you know what? Sorry, Sean Gunn, but I really hate the stoner character of Marty. And you know what? As soon as he walks around that office, starts dumping out water, I'm beating his ass too, period. So, you know, hell, maybe I'm one of the bad guys in this movie if I'm casting this, but there's already 3 or 4 people catching an ass whipping on my end. Look, I love the elevator scene, giving you that music and the kind of that break in the action, kind of reminded me a lot of the Dawn of the Dead remake, when you're breaking it up, which is a touch of comedy with the, why don't you just blow him? I didn't think that was out of place. It made me laugh. But on the flip side, I mean, I know I feel like that scene with Mike and Leandra talking and then Josh Brenner's character telling them that, you know, they could hear all the conversation, like you said, Nico. I felt like that was kind of out of place. Like I was like, well, I don't know. It's just, to me, it was just not the place to put a comedy line in there. But, you know, I guess to each his own, because like you said, you laughed. But also I made a note, like red herring to me in the scene with Mike and Leandro was, you know, when I first saw it, it made me think that she was in on it. You know, when he's actually saying everything that's really happening, like, you know, this is a social experiment and blah, blah, blah. And she's just after everything, just nope, nope. Sorry, that's not it. It's impossible that they were here for a social experiment. Like, no, it's not. So dumbass, like, no. And so that made me think, well, maybe she's actually in on it. And, you know, the way she said it and knowing it, I mean, maybe shit, it wouldn't have been the worst twist in the world to have her kind of be a bad guy at the end, maybe working for the company. I don't know. And also at first, I thought McKinley's character was miscast, but he does a good job, you know, of playing unhinged, like really. So that speaks to his range as an actor, going from comedy with, you know, Scrubs and Office Space that he's known for something like this. And lastly, by the way, like Mike would have a concussion after being hit like that in the back of the head with a fucking fire extinguisher. He would be done the rest of the fucking movie. So I don't buy that at all.
Yeah. So, you know, like I mentioned when I talked last time, to me, these scenes are kind of a come down from the set of scenes before them. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad, but they're just a little slow, a little break in the action to me. It's not that I don't think Mike is making good points. I just, there's part of me that just wants Mike to be a little more assertive, a little more something. I don't know, like hanging the banners and stuff like that. Like, okay, whatever. But, you know, he kind of makes, he's spitting truth, but he doesn't go about it the right way. Like, so I'm just kind of torn when I'm watching this. I'm supposed to be pulling for Mike and Leandra, and right now I'm kind of not. And like you said, Brian, I wanted her to be in on it too. This last watch, I said that would have been a really good twist to throw on here, because she does say some things and do some things to like come at Mike a little bit. And I like the dynamic between the two of them. Like, I will say that I think they have a good like, you know, they're very conflicted, and you can see this situation kind of breaking down Leandra more than it is Mike as far as mentally. And so I like the dynamic where she kind of goes against him, and then by the end, you know, she kind of thinks she needs him and all that stuff. Like, I just kind of like that internal battle for her. The only other thing I really had here outside of Barry ambushing Mike, because now I know who I know he's supposed to be a heel, but I'll be honest, I like heels. So, Barry's a badass, man. Like, I know I'm supposed to be rooting against him, but I have a really hard time doing so. And so when he ambushes Mike, it's not great, but I mean, you know, like Brian said, he would definitely be at least loopy as fuck after being hit like that. Wendell killing Evan, man, I ain't gonna lie. That's the one emotionally tied character that I had is Evan. Like, as far as my investment in seeing him make it out of this thing, I knew he wasn't going to, because that's not how it works. But damn it, man, I wanted it to happen. So fuck you, Wendell. Creepy little bastard.
Yeah, so on these scenes, like you said, Mike, this scene, this is a letdown from where we'd been. We've been riding this high, and then, you know, it just kind of there's some filler in here to me. The scene with the banners is one thing, but then when they start getting shot at, and you know, this, then Mike want to do it again. It's like, God, what are you doing? The water kegs being dumped out, to me, that's what I meant by filler, because that's stupid. It's unnecessary. That doesn't come back into play later.
Right.
There has to be a payoff for, you know, for anything that you're going to spend time on in a movie, unless it's done subtly. He made it a point to, you know, bombard into these different levels and different floors, different office spaces, and dump out their water and make it sound like it's some big conspiracy. And we never touch on it again. It's unnecessary. Then, you know, we get Barry as a confirmed psychopath. I wouldn't say psychopath. He's a sociopath. That motherfucker don't care about anything except for being a pervert. And the continuity factor, you're telling me that Lonnie accidentally bashed Bud's skull in with that wrench, but Mike being, you know, railed in the back of the head fire extinguisher, like, that's not going to at least do more damage. Like you said, he would be concussed at least, but we saw earlier a death that was less believable than him surviving this hit to the back of the head with little
you know, especially his shit was already busted open where he had to get stitched open when he was cutting his own thing out. Yep. So these things just aren't great to me. I don't have a lot more to say about them other than it is a letdown. And at this point in the movie, I'm like, okay, I really hope that the finish of this movie is fulfilling, because right now I'm kind of in a lull.
Yeah, this is why I completely just do not like Mike's character right now. And he doesn't redeem himself to me. And, all right. Barry, he unlocks the weapons closet and he hands out the guns to everyone. There's not a lot of them. And then Barry says their new god put these guns here. Mike wakes up in a daze and sees Evan's corpse. All the people are now assembled in the lobby. I can't remember if it was Stuckman. They were talking about how weird the score is this movie. It's like all the people are assembled now in the lobby, and we're getting some strange opera symphony kind of music playing, and it doesn't fit. I don't like it. Barry has everyone with kids under 18 move to one corner of the walls, and now he has everyone over 60 move to another corner. Barry says this is difficult, but the right move. And the next person to speak will be killed. Now they start collecting people randomly. Wendell kills the resisting man, shoots the fuck out of him. We see Danny roaming the halls underground. Barry has music turned on before the execution. He kills a woman who questions him. Wendell keeps count as people die. Mike begs to Terry to give him the gun because Terry's kind of trembling. Terry goes to shoot him, but Danny flips the switch and she turns all the lights off in the building. They all start scattering like roaches, and then they just start shooting, they just open fire randomly. Danny and Roberto climb on top of an elevator, and I just read this quick cuts between the people getting killed with, different people with guns. Barry tells them that don't count, just kill and go. Intercom says 29 dead and 2 minutes remain. If one more not dead, then 30 more will be killed. Terry is ambushed by Leandra, but she can't kill him. The blood of 30 others are on her hands now. That's what I wrote. And this is where Leandra loses me too. Intercom says one short and heads start to explode to more weird music. Marty cries and says it's all in my mind as he sees heads exploding. The last to die is Keith. Outside shot of a dog pissing on the fence, and we see the building. I didn't understand. That was filler to me. Last stage of the game. Whoever has the most kills gets to live, the voice says. Wendell goes ham on some folks with a meat cleaver. And, hey, Mike, I'm stealing your line. Whoever this hot woman is trying to use her sex to spare her, but he kills her by twisting her head around. Hey, that chick can call me sometime. And Leandra, I'll get into this later, but Leandra just pisses me off here. She has the ample opportunity to save 30 people's lives but can't kill Terry. But later on, she has all the rage in the world to kill Wendell. It's like, come on. All right, go ahead, Brian. Let me get off my soapbox.
Yeah, this execution scene, I mean, woo. Look, especially like, and I know you just talked about the soundtrack a little bit, like that classical music, this part with the classical music playing at the beginning where it's showing you the chaos, like you can just read it in Adria Arona's eyes. Like she plays it so well, you can almost hear what she's thinking. But I think the classical music right there works. But like I said, the execution scene is the best in this movie, man. There's a ton of tension. Everyone plays it so damn well. It's just such a disturbing fucking scene. Like, this is the one that sticks with me. And I wrote this down, and it's funny that you touched on it, but I'm actually undecided where it's like playing the Latin version of California Dreamin' music, like soundtrack over all the killing. Like, I don't know, like, because I really love that song. But, I couldn't decide if I liked it in the scene or not, or if I would have rather just heard the normal soundtrack there. I wish I could get it for comparison because I really couldn't make up my mind. And I even, like I said, I even have that written down. So it's funny you brought that up. Plus, like, just shit, the gore from like 30 more people being killed at the end, like watching that, I was just fucking like speechless, like, holy shit. And I laughed at the Danielle being announced, or the Danny being announced, like having one kill, and that dude like takes his arm away from her. I don't think that was misplaced comedy. I actually laughed at that. But Barry twisting the chick's head, like it was a really good visual for a horror movie, but I always give it like a big, like unless it's Jason Voorhees or like Rob Zombie's Michael Myers, like stuff like that. Like, just based on how damn strong do you really realistically have to be to do something like that? I always just go, whenever something like that happens in a horror movie. Unless you're one of those two guys.
Yeah, so I like the set of scenes. It's almost like miss hit so far, where I'm a big fan of this set of scenes because of the tension. And I know we get a lot more quote unquote carnage candy here because, you know, they knock off about 30 more people or whatever. You know, they are, you know, all, you know, the execution scene and everybody, you know, being killed and Wendell using a fucking meat cleaver to kill people. Like, this set of scenes has a lot of the more horror movie type things that I like when I watch a horror movie. So I give props to that. Like, I enjoy a lot of this. I love the execution scene because it puts me in their shoes and I can almost feel what they're feeling in that moment. And, you know, who gives Barry the right to play God? Well, you guys kind of already talked about it. He just takes over the situation and he is like a bad, I hate to keep using this comparison, but he is like a badass, you know, wrestling guy. He's Brock Lesnar. Like, he took over. He's kind of hard to pull against. And it's just, I think even in this situation, like, I'm not necessarily pulling for him to kill everybody, but since these are the rules of the game, he's playing the game the right way. Like, I just don't see what's to root against here other than him, you know, being a trained killer, which, okay, whatever. Lights go out. Everyone, I don't know if that necessarily needed that, but Brian, you touched on the music. I loved that Spanish version of California Dreaming. It's awesome. One, it's been in my head for the last two fucking days, driving me absolutely nuts. But I did like it in this scene because it was so opposite of what was going on in the scene to me. Like, people are dying, and against that is in the backdrop is a Spanish version of California Dreaming. Like, I thought it was really well done. Maybe it's supposed to be a little bit of a dark comedy there. I don't know. You know, you kind of touched on the different directions of the script and the director and all that, but I thought it worked great, man. I thought it was good. And, you know, Leandro not being able to kill Terry, get the fuck out of here with that. That's garbage, man. And I think Barry twisting the head around is a cool kill, but I kind of scoff at that as well. Always. Unless it's like Michael Myers, Jesse Voorhees, or somebody like that, I'm scoffing at that.
Yeah, I can respect that. So I want to go back to, yeah,
I thought the score was great.
Yeah,
I enjoyed the classical music that they used.
Yeah, the classical music is good too.
I enjoyed the Spanish California Dreaming. I think it's perfect because you ever watch the movie American Psycho? It's the same situation. Like, listen to the movie that he was listening to when he was killing the people. So to me, when you're in this sociopathic environment, you know, metal music or typical movie score is not really accurate. It's not really believable. This, to me, is what the people that put this whole experiment together, this is what they're probably listening to watching it because they view it as some kind of fucked up art. And so I actually really like the score of this whole film. The selection scene, as far as who's dying, who's living, man, that shit was intense. You talk about instantly grabbing me right back in and, okay, let's get your attention. Let's get your engagement back up, because how do you make that call? How do you play God? How do you justify, well, you're over 60, so you're going to die. You know, holy shit. That's intense. And then, you know, fast forward to when, Wendell becomes completely unhinged. It's like, holy shit. This is what I've expected from his character the whole time. Like, I'm surprised we got this long without him just going off, going rogue and chopping people up. And then the woman that tried to seduce her way into living, you know, that's the woman in the opening scene. She walked by Barry and kind of smiled, but then rolled her eyes as she passed. And you see him mouth, oh my God. Like, that's why she was trying to, here, you can have me, I'm yours, her way into living. That's sad as fuck, because that's believable. If this were to take place, if this were some kind of reality in an office space environment, guarantee there's women that feel like they could take their shirt off and their boss would spare their life. That's the sad reality. And so that, to me, added a little bit of extra credibility to the situation, because there's some sick fucks out there that are in these powers of position. Yep. Leandra, yeah, you really fucked up, girl. You should have killed Terry. I mean, you dropped the ball. I hate to put the death of 30 people, put their blood on your hands, but the reality is you fucked up.
No,
you
could've fuck that. It's on her hands, man.
Yeah. But I mean, the reality is, like we've known all along, let's say she did kill him, they were still only going to let maybe one person walk away from this. So the only thing she did was expedite the process.
That's true.
That's fair.
And she also, in doing so, she didn't guarantee herself a spot in the next round because they could have killed her. So in my mind, I'm thinking they're going to kill 30 people if I don't, or 31 people if I don't kill this one. I could be one of those 31. Whereas if I kill him, I'm at least staying alive a little bit longer. So you're giving yourself a more of a chance. So that's the kind of the moral seesaw that you have to be on right there. But it does lead to one of my absolute favorite scenes. And that's when she doesn't do it and they start pushing the buttons and flipping the switches on everybody. When all the carnage stops, you get the nerd and he's like, "Oh, it stopped," and then his head explodes. I laughed my ass off because that was perfect because he thought he was spared. And yet again, we get, "Gotcha, bitch." But I did also have in my notes, though, Brian, you mentioned it when they're on top of the elevator and he's got his arm around Danny and they announce the kill counts. He just like slowly moves his arm off of her. I thought that was brilliant because, come on, that's kind of how you'd be, right? You find out that the person you think that this person's been just hiding out and taking it easy and trying to survive like you, and you don't expect them to have the capability to end someone's life. Oh, you killed somebody. I'm just going to move over here a little bit. But I was annoyed with him being on top of the elevator anyway. So I'm glad that he got his comeuppance in the next couple scenes. Go ahead.
All right. The next two scenes are the ending. And then after y'all go, I'm going to ask y'all a question. A hypothetical, if it would make this movie better or not. All right, Barry enters the elevator with Danny and Roberto. He hears them on top and he starts to shoot at them. Danny jumps off, but Roberto gets crushed between the elevator and an exit. Now Barry is stuck in the elevator. Leandra finds Chet and Marty. She asks what they're doing. They're getting the bombs out of people's heads to try and blow a hole in the wall. Leandra calls for Mike over the radio. Leandra finds Wendell in the cafeteria after he killed Tyson. She shoots him in the arm and he falls to the ground. And now Wendell, he kills Marty and Chet with gunshots. And then Leandra kills the fuck out of Wendell with axe chop to the face. Dude, she fucked him up. Danny starts to monkey bar climb across the elevator shaft. Barry pries out the elevator. Danny jumps into another elevator. Mike and Leandra run from Molotov cocktails. Out, but then they turn around when Barry shoots at them as they try and go up the stairway. Barry kills Antonio with gunshots. Danny drops down into an elevator. When the doors open, Barry is there and kills her instantly.
It's fucking awesome, by the way.
Yes.
Leandra tells Mike she loves him as she dies. She apparently took a gunshot wound from Barry. Mike runs out a locker, then ambushes Barry. Hand-to-hand combat now. Mike gets him in a chokehold and then bashes his head in with a tape dispenser with slow-mo and weird music. The barriers drop, and Voice says he's the last remaining employee. The guards escort him out to the hangar. He meets the Voice. It's a test on human behavior. They begin to question him. All part of an international organization. What emotions do you feel now? Mike says he put the explosives on the guards, and then he runs to the switches and starts hitting all the switches and he kills him. He grabs the gun and he kills all the others. Mike exits the hangar victoriously. He looks at the sky, but we see another monitor watching him and all the other survivors around the world. End stage one, commence stage two, another voice says. All right, that's the ending. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, you said it. Leandra's axe kill on a Wendell. Yeah, that's my favorite in the movie. I mean, holy shit. Like, I think it's great effects there. There have been great effects to me this entire movie, but that's the pinnacle of them right there in that kill. Danny going through all of that and then bam, being shot when the elevator opened. I laughed my ass off at that too. And I don't think that was supposed to be funny, but you're just like, oh fuck, like Jesus. And also, I don't know if I said this earlier, but I was kind of hoping that Leandra was going to be the final girl, as unlikable to me as Mike has been this entire movie. I was kind of rooting for her to kind of be get to the final deal there, which I think it would have been, to me, I think it would have been better to end with her, you know, in Mike's place. But speaking of Mike, not to mention the fight with Barry, to me, is fucking ridiculous. Like, Mike's already got a concussion, or he fucking should. You know, Barry was in the special damn forces and, spun that girl's head around like fucking Exorcist earlier and should have easily killed Mike. Like, as much as I hated it, though, like, Barry's death I thought was really good. Obviously, that's kind of the poster of the whole movie with him beating him with that with a stapler or no tape dispenser, I think it was. But it was almost like the score right there was weird. Like, it was almost like some superhero buildup as like he smashed the tape into his face. So, I mean, it was just, I don't know. I didn't like that just because, like I said, I think that was not realistic, and Barry definitely should have beat his ass right there. And then maybe been shot by Leandra who made it to the end. I don't know. But as far as the ending does go, like, the soldiers dragging him, and this might be a little controversial, but the soldiers dragging him out of the building and it just kind of, you got that really bright light. I think that would have been a pretty sweet ending, because, like, you never go in the control room, never finding out anything in there, and leaving all that up to, like, your mind, and just be like, well, what the fuck was it? Like, I don't know. I feel like that would have been a cool way to end it. People might have been more pissed off with that. I don't know. But if I was making the movie, I probably would have ended it right there. But with all that said, I am kind of glad how, as much as I didn't like Mike, his character arc went from someone who, like, believed life was sacred and just, but he went through the shit and, you know, was hardened, and by the end just was fucking up for killing whoever. So I liked that character arc. And then obviously, you know, they tried to set up a sequel that never really happened. And obviously, and that reminded me of Cabin in the Woods too. So I don't know. Like I said, I've done the ending a little bit differently, so I kind of think it's just okay.
Yeah, I love a lot of this. Like, I think most of this is really, really good. I think Wendell dying the way that he did, even though Leandra should have already had a kill under her belt, this is a good kill. Like, I think he got what he deserved here. The big ass axe to the face. It was fucking awesome. A brutal kill. I loved it. The way that I said it, I spoke over Nico. The way that Danny got killed is fucking hilarious. Just simple, straight to the point, boom, right to the head in the elbow. Like, I thought that after running away the entire fucking movie, she finally, you know, had to see somebody and she met her maker. So I don't know. I didn't like, I mean, I'm not saying her character wasn't necessarily smart, but ended up being stupid because wrong place, wrong time, bam, right to the head. I loved all that. You made a good point. The way Barry dies, while not realistic, because it's at the hands of Mike, I will say this. We talked about it a lot on this show with other movies, that descent into madness, mm-hmm. for Mike, I think it pulled off pretty well with the Barry kill. Now, granted, you know, Barry's special ops, trained to kill people, I get all that, but that last bit of rage for Mike, because, you know, Leandra's gone, I have nothing left to live for, it's me or you, dude. Like, that last ditch effort, like, I appreciate that in the character arc of Mike, finally doing something at least. And I talked about it at the very beginning, he used an office supply to beat his head in, which is something I think this movie could have done more. I don't know if that's budget or there's maybe it wasn't the story they were trying to tell, but I think it would have created some really cool kills with, like, staplers and fucking pencils and pens and copy machine. I don't know. I feel like there could have been a lot more cool kills than this, but this one is one of my favorites. Like, I think it's really well done. And the way it's shot, you know, the movie poster we got out of that scene, I think is really cool as well. So the twist with Mike, you know, they pull him out and they go through all that. I think, first of all, the cinematography in this last, like, 8 minutes or so is really good. You know, I talked about the movie poster kill and how they kind of pull Mike out, like the way that they kind of play with the shadows and stuff. Like, I think that's really well done. I don't hate the twist. Like, I think that, first of all, Mike killing all them is fine with me. Like, I think that's, like, I like that part, even though it took him an hour and a half to actually kill somebody. Now, you know, he's lost it. Like, he's off the deep end. I kind of like that part. What I don't know if I liked so much is the way that that wasn't the game. The game still goes on. That was a game within a game, and that was trying to set up a sequel. And so I get it from that standpoint, but if we don't ever get that payoff, then I'm going to be a little let down by it because, I don't know, I feel like they kind of wrapped it up in a nice, neat little bow that maybe the game being within another game wasn't entirely necessary. So it's a nitpick. I don't hate it, but I thought it was well done. I thought the last 15 minutes of the movie is really intense and a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, so the ending was kind of hit and miss for me. I like that, you know, Danny's shocking death because, yeah, we thought that she was going to hide her way into winning somehow or escaping somehow, but then it's like, nope, bam, she did. I laughed. And then, you know, you get the setup to where it looks like you might have Leandra and Marty being the final two, like Cabin in the Woods, where Marty is one of the final two. But nope, he catches one to the face as well. And so then you get Wendell's death, which, my God, was that satisfying just to watch this creepy pervert who's come unhinged and killed all these people brutally and then just been a scumbag the whole movie. Or I shouldn't say scumbag, been ruthless the whole movie. At least, and then to see him get axed in the face. And I thought the way that that was shot also was very well done because they couldn't go overboard with the gore, but they did enough cuts to it to where you get the idea, you know that it's brutal.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was well done. And yeah, Mike, you mentioned how you wish that the film had more office supply related deaths. Same here. Because to me, that would have made the opening montage more rewarding, more fulfilling. Because we get to look at the copier. We get a look at all these office supplies, and they hardly come into play. And I don't want to hear budgetary constraints because there's an episode of the show Gotham, season one, episode eight, to where Jim Gordon, they're investigating a office fight club, basically, to where this guy is making people, candidates, fight to the death in an office.
Nice.
For a job in his financial firm. And some of the way that they shoot that episode was holy shit. Go back and watch that one episode if you want to see how this could have been made so much better. Season one, episode eight of Gotham. It's a great show. Nice. And then, you know, you get, okay, Mike's your winner. He gets to survive. Great, cool, whatever. I didn't hate him as much as a lot of you guys did, I don't think. But I also didn't love him. It was kind of, okay, yeah. He lived. I don't care that he lived, but I'm glad that someone did, I guess. But then he goes, oh, now you see me on us, and drops the bombs into the guards' pockets like they're not going to notice that shit. I didn't like that part. He's, you know, carrying around these little explosive devices in his hands and just drops them in their pockets all nonchalantly. Like, and then, ho-ho, little did you know, you're going to die. And then when he's hitting all the buttons, if you look, they didn't make that big of an explosion to me for a blast to the rib cage area to instantly kill these people. To me, that's more of a bleeding out type death. So I don't think they put up as much of a resistance as they should have been for that scene to be as believable as it could have. But I do like the way he just went ape shit and emptied the clip on the voice's face. That was pretty dope. And, you know, you get the, like you said, it looks like, okay, we're getting a sequel because we hear engaged sequence two or whatever the phrasing was. We didn't get a sequel. I'm okay with not getting a sequel.
Yeah.
My problem is, though, if we're not going to get a sequel, I'm one of those people that I don't like questions left unanswered. And this has a lot of them.
Yeah.
For there not to be a sequel, like, what the fuck's this all about? We get it. It's a social experiment, but this is happening all around the world. There's cameras set up, you know, a shit ton of cameras, and there's no real explanation. That's fine, but it's just it'll leave you asking questions that I think they could have tied a prettier bow on. And as far as the ending goes, it was better than those scenes that drug to me, but it could have been done a lot better.
Well, you see, Dustin, there's some monsters that are under the earth, and you know, if they don't kill,
Hey,
Nico, will you watch your mouth?
The only thing that was missing from this movie was Heckraiser, but
The only thing missing from this movie was green ooze from Manhattan. Oh, sorry, never mind. Go ahead.
Jeez.
Groans over that, but thinks green ooze is okay. Anyway.
All right. Here's a question I just thought of, hypothetical.
All right. So I think Mike and Leandra are as beta gets. Let's insert two badasses in this movie. Who wins if you insert Mark Hoffman from Saw as Mike and you insert Juno as Leandra, Juno from The Descent? Who do y'all think ends up winning?
Oh, dear God.
I would have loved to have Juno in there win that. That would have been badass.
I'm taking my guy, Mark Hoffman. There's no way he's losing. That's a bad motherfucker.
I got to go with Hoffman as well. Mainly because I hated The Descent so much.
And you love Saw, so that's why you're going with that.
First of all, fuck off, Dustin. God, this is a weekly thing, you know. It really is. Second of all, I'm going to take Juno just because she was a badass. That's right. I said it. And The Descent is great. But so is Saw 2. So is Saw 2. So, you know.
Great. That's his bar for great, The Descent. Wow.
You defended Jason Takes Manhattan. Anyway.
I didn't give it a good score, though.
Yeah, you didn't.
Are y'all ready to jump into fun facts? I only got one of them.
Yeah, I don't have any.
I don't either.
But I think that would be a cool, you know, hypothetical if you put a bunch of alphas in there fighting to the death. This is the only one I have. This is from IMDb. Play on irony. In the beginning of the movie, Mike buys a corncob doll from a street merchant that is said to bring good luck. The toy gets passed around over the course of the movie, ultimately ending with Mike, the sole survivor. Oh, that was kind of interesting. Has anybody else got any fun facts? Or
I have my normal money talk. Here we go.
Money Mike, the traveling man.
Oh, here we. Hey, listen, man. I had to borrow money from you this time. Anyway, this movie grossed $11 million worldwide against a $5 million budget. So not a huge money maker, obviously, but it made its budget back. So I don't think it spent a ton on marketing or anything like that. So, again, didn't make a lot of money. Mixed reviews at the box office. So I don't ever see us getting that sequel unless it's like straight to Netflix or straight to Shudder or something.
Hey, Mike, how much money did it make globally?
$11 million.
That's Manhattan money.
I was going to say, Manhattan made more than that.
At least it had Jason Voorhees in it, I guess.
Yeah, that's ain't that the damn truth. At least it had somebody cool in it.
Oh, in 2018, Meg. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, let's jump into our favorite kill, least favorite kill, and our rating. This week is brought to you by Manscaped. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with the code Don't Go. All right, Brian, do you want to go first or last tonight with your rating?
I'll go first. I'll go ahead and set it up. My favorite kill, I said it. It was the Andres kill on Wendell. I thought the effects were great, and I really enjoyed that one. Even though it didn't, like Dustin say, show the whole thing, it kept cutting to it, which I think made it better. If they'd have just cut away from it, I wouldn't have liked it as much. For the worst kill, I guess I could have gone with any of the off screen ones, but I'm going to step up and go with the head spin kill, the Exorcist head spin kill, just because that bothered me how unbelievable it was. As far as the movie goes, you know, I kind of said I really liked how it was kind of, you know, this whole social experiment, like, you know, what would you do if you were put in the situation? You know, would you do something that like murder that you knew something was wrong? To survive, or at least in a situation where you thought to survive. Like I said, I understand the nitpicks. I said that at the beginning. I had a few myself, but I enjoy the movie. I think it's a good watch. I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Dave, that's what I got next, or I can. It doesn't matter.
I mean, I can go unless you want to go, Nico.
I'll go ahead and go. Mike, you can go after me.
Okay.
Brian, I agree with you. Favorite kill is Wendell. Head axe repeatedly by Leandra is brutal, and I just said the same thing. The effects look really good on that. My least favorite kill, I had a tie. It was between Leandra and every head explosion after the first one. I was like, okay, I get it now. My rating, I gave it I'm continuing off last week. I gave this a 6.5 as well. Good concept. Gave me some Saw 2 vibes. I just didn't get the same sense of desperation to live or the anxiety and fear of their environment as I got from Saw 2. I'm not a big fan of Mike being the survivor or his character. I'd much rather have seen badass Barry be the victor or see him versus Wendell fight to the death at the end. The score was weird and didn't fit at times. The gas tank should have exploded when Mike shot it. Big nitpick. Leandra pissed me off. She let 30 others die because she couldn't kill Terry, like she does 10 minutes later with Wendell. It's an entertaining film to just turn on and watch, but it's not the first Blu-ray I'm going to grab. The ending with the monitors watching felt kind of blah, too. Just reminded me of, like, the ending of The Hills Have Eyes or The Crazies, but just felt like a way to set up another sequel. Just didn't hit the same, and I wrote this again. I really like Barry. He should have won the whole thing. Shout out to my guy Tony, the guy from Ghost. And I remember Brian saying in the past that Ghost was actually kind of scary, and it is, because them demons coming out of the ground was scary. That shit scared me.
Yeah, it was. When I was little, I did. It was. When I was little.
That shit fucked me up as a little kid.
Hell yeah.
Chick flicks are very scary.
Fuck you, Dustin.
Hey, Unchained Melody is a fucking bop, though. Anyway, sorry. Okay, so my least favorite kill is Evan for emotional reasons. He was one of my favorite characters, and to see him die is bullshit. I shouldn't have made it longer. It's an unfit death of a king, you know? Anyway, my favorite kill is Barry, and the reason is because of the fact that he used an office supply. The effects were pretty good for what we saw, the way they cut it. I thought, and just the shot from the poster and the graphic we're going to use this week, I think is awesome. Like, so that alone just kind of made the kill for me. A really, 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 really close second is Wendell. So yeah, man, that's a fair kill. So overall, I'm back and forth on this movie. I think there's a lot of good here. I think the concept is really cool. And I think some of the characters are well-rounded and likable, and I think it's an entertaining watch. But kind of like Nico said, I'm not reaching for it all that much. But if it's on and it's there, I'm entertained. Like, I'm not bored or anything. So it's a middle of the road for me. I'm going to go 6.75. I decided to go two numbers this week just because I haven't in so long. But I hated to give it a 6.5 because I remember some of the other movies I gave 6.5 to, and I enjoyed this movie more than those. So I had to go a little bit of a bump here.
Okay, so for my least favorite kill, I got to go Evan as well. My man deserves so much better. And it really just irritated me how it was. If he's gonna die, give him a cool death, man. He just gets stabs in the gut and left the blood. I don't know.
It
just
bothered me. Anyway.
as far as my favorite kill, I'm actually going with the nerd. His name was Keith. Just because how much I laughed with, because he's like, "Oh, it's over. We made it, pal. I'm dead." Like, that shit cracks me up. But from an actual favorite kill standpoint, I guess Wendell, just because of how fulfilling it was, because he's such a creep. And then the brutality of the axe smashes to the face. As far as the movie, man, you know, like I said, this movie had a lot of potential as far as what they could have done because of the storyline, because of the believability and realness. Like, this could feasibly happen. You know, a terrorist attack, they could lock a building down, make you weed yourself out, and crown a winner. I just think that they left too much meat on the bone. They could have done it so much better. Maybe it would have been different if James Gunn had stayed on to direct it instead of going off to do Guardians of the Galaxy, which I'm thankful he did. But who knows? We'll never know. So for that reason, and the fact, like I said, the ending was kind of ho-hum. It had good moments, but had moments that I think could have been improved. They built it like we're getting a sequel and we never got it. So you got all those unanswered questions. For that reason, I got to go with a 6 for the movie. I know that seems a little low, but that's my MO, right? I'm always the low man on totem poles for his ratings goes, unless it's a movie I've picked. But composite wise, that gives us a 6.6875 for the movie.
That's about right, I would think.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I mean, that seems to be the general consensus online as well. So that makes sense.
Has anybody got any final thoughts before Mike announces his pick for next week?
No, sir.
No, I'm good.
Mike, you ready to announce your pick for next week, brother?
Yeah, I'm excited
for this one.
Yeah, man. I thought so. I went back and forth on a couple different movies here, but I was reorganizing my DVDs, and I was like, I need to pick something from here that we haven't touched on in a while. And man, we did 2003's Texas Chainsaw Massacre way, way back. It's been a long time. The show has grown so much since then. you know, Dustin's on board now and stuff. So I felt like it was time to kind of revisit some Leatherface. It had been a while. So I actually picked the prequel to that movie, which is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning. Again, I went on a string of picking, you know, box office, box office darlings as far as making money and being very famous-y horror movies, classics. And my last two have just been fun for me. Fun slasher type horror movies where I can sit down and enjoy it. And there's a lot of good in this to me. One thing I will automatically give props to is my man R. Lee Ermey. Shout out. Get to talk some more R. Lee Ermey next week, fellas.
Oh, and Jordana Brewster and D.R. Borden. Call me sometime.
I'll save it.
No, not to take away from Brian's pick, but next week's going to be fun. You're right. We did 03 Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think episode five after Friday the 13th. We've grown so much since then. We're so much better in our formula now. And I love The Beginning, honestly. I'm looking forward to reviewing that. So great choice, Mike. Has anybody got any final thoughts?
Do not.
I'm good, fellas.
I just wanted to give you a... Yeah, it was a fun episode. This was a fun movie to watch, honestly. I mean, I haven't watched in a while.
Yep.
And I hope my score, nobody else's score, you know, turns anybody off from watching it. But it's a fun watch. It's only like an hour and 30 minutes. So, I mean, yeah, it's not a long watch. And it's action-packed the whole time. So you'll definitely be entertained the whole movie.
Yeah.
Just wanted to give one more quick shout-out to Manscaped. Go over to manscaped.com. Use our code DON'TGO, and you'll get 20% off and free shipping. And, you know, and I'm just going to be serious here. I already had a Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, and it's great for what you use it for. You know, I know they like the funny ads, but I'm just being sincere here. It's a good product. If you have the ability to support, check them out. It's worth it. And if you don't, we really appreciate support anyways. Share our post and just let everybody else know. We'd really appreciate it. Looking forward to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, next week. And y'all have a good night. We thank you for the support. Just want to remind everybody. Don't go out there. Siempre estarás en mi corazón. Y la